The Scottish Mortgage Podcast, Invest in Progress, is back. Join the managers and their guests as they go behind the scenes of some of the most innovative companies of our time. Companies like Climeworks, who are pioneering technology to remove carbon dioxide from the air. Or Zobi, who are at the forefront of a new era of aviation developing electric air taxis. Or Aurora, who are building software so that trucks can drive themselves. Hear from the leaders of these exceptional businesses on their vision and what the world could look like if they succeed. Available now on all major platforms. Your capital is at risk.
Hi, everyone, and welcome back to The Advice Show. I'm Zach, a reporter at New Model Advisor. I'm joined today by data reporter Alicia Hagopian. And today we're talking about lifestyle financial planning, how clients can get the most out of retirement, and what extraordinary tales it can lead to. David, thank you so much for joining us. I'm joined by David Lamb from Lamb Financial.
Hello.
First, I have to bring up, we had a story in New Model Advisor a few weeks ago based on an interview that I had with David. A fascinating interview, I'm sure he won't mind me saying. And it was all to do with an escaped monkey that was found last month, I believe, in the Scottish Highlands. David, could you just talk us through what on earth happened?
Well, going back to the work we did with the client, it was a lovely lady who had recently been widowed. This going back nearly 4 years. She didn't have any family, no brothers, sisters, cousins, nephews, nieces. And after about a year or so, I was asking her, what was all this money for that she had? And she said, well, I'm just going to leave the charities in my will. And there was the Cancer Trusts and British Heart Foundation and the Dogs Trust. And I said, but Louis, you could live another 25 years. That's a lot of dogs that are going to suffer in that time. Why don't we think about giving some money now? Give with a warm hand and not a cold hand. And she thought that was a really, really good idea. And her face lit up. And then I said, well, but this wasn't just your money. It was Norman's money as well. What was close to him? And she said, oh, well, his passions were the Scottish Highlands, the Scottish mountains and hill walking, and scouting and rugby. So to cut a long story short, we eventually decided to give money to a outdoor training centre called Glenmore Lodge to run a course in her husband's name for underprivileged kids to help them get into the mountains and then train them in mountain skills. And I just said as a joke afterwards, you know, if we're going to help the kids get into the mountains, we should really help them get out of the mountains if something goes wrong. So she said, yes, let's talk to Cairngorm Mountain Rescue. So we got in touch with Cairngorm Mountain Rescue and we said, look, we told them the kind of money Louis was thinking about donating. What would you do with the money? Oh, we would buy a drone. So they bought the drone. They had it for about a month, I think, before they could use it because it had to get insured. And then I was talking to a friend of mine who's a fireman up in Inverness, and he was telling me that he'd been on a job south of Inverness in the summer where there'd been a big moorland fire, and he said there was black smoke everywhere, and he said it was really difficult because the firemen couldn't see what was happening. And then he said, but Cairngorm Mountain Rescue have got a new drone. I said, well, you don't say. I'll tell you about that drone. So then, and he said to me, well, you need to tell your client that is going to save somebody's life one day. And then Louis got into a couple of the Scottish papers about times where the drone had been used, and it was all nice, and it was like, you know, we're saying, Louis, one day your donation is going to save a life. We did think it was going to be a human life, not a monkey life, but then it was just one Tuesday night. I was driving home from work, and the news was on, and they were saying there's a monkey escaped from Kincraig Wildlife Park, and Cairngorm Mountain Rescue are using their drone to help search for it. And I was like, oh, hang on a minute. So straight on the phone to Louis. Louis, have you heard the news? She says, I've just heard it. That's our drone. I'm thinking, well, no, Louis, it's your drone, not mine. So over the next few days, we had a lot of fun, you know, sharing news, sharing photos that were on the internet of monkeys in kilts. And, you know, from meeting Louis, you know, not long after her husband had died, to having this fun, it was just lovely. And you know, you can have it's just nice to have fun with clients. Yeah, it was just lovely. And Louis said, "Oh, I saw the news when the monkey had been recaptured." She said, "It looked very sorry for itself." And I said, "Yeah, you've probably saved that animal's life." All I did was give Louis the confidence to gift the money and arrange a Zoom meeting. Really, that's as much as I did.
Yeah, and obviously you play that down, but you know that is the role of a financial planner, and sort of what we wanted the theme to be the episode about today was, you know, it's not just about trying to grow your assets and you know, not having those face-to-face interactions with a client where they realize how much their money can do for them, what their life means.
That's right. And I think when you get into proper lifestyle financial planning, you basically have two types of client, accumulators and decumulators. And the decumulators are the fun clients to work with because you're getting them to spend the money, and you know, whether it's gifting money like Louis did or go on holiday, or you know, that's fun. And a lot of clients don't expect that from a financial advisor because they think financial advisors are all about accumulating money and taking a cut off the percentages the investments grow by. But then you've got to learn how to give the clients the confidence to decumulate their money without the fear of running out. And what I quite often do is get them to understand that it's nothing special. One of the reasons you find it's difficult to decumulate is because you're changing the way your brain's always worked. So what I do, and I'll do this with you now, is I get my clients to fold their arms. So fold your arms.
Sorry, yeah.
Now fold them the other way.
Oh, it's difficult, isn't it?
Exactly. It's because your brain is wired to fold them like that. And then when I come along and tell you to do it the other way, the brain doesn't like it. And it's the same with money. Your brain's spent most of your life accumulating, and then we come along and say, no, now it's the time you've saved all that money up, but what are you going to do with it? You now start to decumulate, and the brain's going, oh, I don't like that. So cash flow modeling really helps in the coaching to help them decumulate.
I think it's really, really stuck with me what you just said, sort of giving something with a warm hand instead of a cold hand, I think you said. Very gripping imagery. But I think that, you know, that must be something you come across quite often. And I think it's actually, you're right that it's surprisingly rare. I mean, a lot of people have all these aspirations to be giving to charity, and it's incredibly rare that they end up doing so before they die to that sort of degree. I mean, the thousands are given to like a drone in that instance. And I guess, what is it that you think is sort of holding clients back from that? And as you said, that fear of not having enough, and how do you actually, what are the conversations that you have that you sort of calm them down and say, you deserve to sort of see the benefits of your money helping someone else while you're still here?
I think it's two main factors. The first one is, I think the financial service industry has got people conned into thinking they need to accumulate and accumulate and accumulate more money. But they don't. And I had a telephone call from somebody who said, oh, I've got somebody that's interested in buying your business. And I said, but the problem with that is you base the value of my business on the income we get from our funds under management. And that's completely wrong, because you're basing the value of my business on the value of other people's money, that I should be getting them to spend. And this agent said, well, why are you getting them to do that? Why are you getting them to spend their money? Well, because that's what it's for. That's all. You can't do anything else with money other than spend it. And whilst that money's invested in people's investments, if they're never going to spend it, it's not doing them any good because it's tied up in their investments. So they're not, you know, they're not seeing any benefit from it. And it's not doing their children any good because they can't spend it because it's tied up in their parents' investments. But But if you're never going to spend it, give it away now. And it's something that clients don't realise that, you know, I'll say to a client, you know, if you live to age 100, how old will your kids be when they inherit? They're usually going to be in their 70s. Well, it's too late to inherit then. They've paid their mortgages off. They've put the kids through school, university, weddings, all that kind of stuff. When they don't need the money, they get it. Well, get it to them before. But as I say, you've got to give them the confidence that they know they can give the money away without running out. And that's, you've got to get them to work out how much they would feel confident with as a minimum amount in their assets or their liquid assets, their cash, their investments. And it's not a mathematical question. It's more an emotional question. What's the minimum amount you would want so that if you went below that, you would start to worry about money? And what we do with the cash flow modelling is we say, right, we're going to do these projections to get you to spend more money, but you're never going to drop below that amount.
So I think that, you know, you just mentioned a second ago about how a lot of clients might be sort of interested in passing their money along to their children, but people are living longer. So that sort of point at which they're passing along that money gets later and later. So I guess one of the ways that money can be used to pay off your children's mortgages. I'm wondering sort of what are the other ways that your clients are interested in spending that money that might be more typical, like paying a child's mortgages or medical bills or maybe buying a second home? Are there any other trends that you see? So,
yes, and it's still monkey related. We about 13 years ago, I was sat with clients and I said, look, how much do you want to leave? And at the time, the maximum you could leave without paying inheritance tax was 650,000. So we worked out how much they could spend over the next 10 years without dropping below 650,000. And it was on average £30,000 a year. And he said straight away, oh, well, I'll go and buy a new car then. And I said, well, for inheritance tax purposes, you need to get a car that has high depreciation. I said, really, what you need to do is go on holiday more. And then his wife started to get a little bit uncomfortable. And she said, oh, I'm sick of driving around Europe and I'm sick of going on cruises. And I said, yeah, but there's a big wide world out there. Why don't you go further afield? And because I got on really well with them, and still do, I managed to get out that she was scared of flying. So I was driving home and I was saying, well, what do we do here? And then I remembered a friend of mine was scared of flying, and Virgin were doing flying phobia courses from Newcastle Airport. So I Googled that, sent them the link to this course. And to cut a long story short, she went on the course at Newcastle Airport in the February. And then in the May, we got a postcard from them with orangutans on, because they were in Borneo seeing the orangutans in the wild, because that was on the top of his bucket list. And then the following month, they went to Barcelona for a long weekend with friends, because now they've got over this. And over the next 10 years, they had four or five holidays a year. But as they got older, the flights got shorter and shorter. But they only just got back into the country before lockdown. But about 5 years ago, their son-in-law was diagnosed with cancer. And I think he only had about 9 months to live. But he had a fantastic attitude. He basically said to the doctors, look, you give me the poison, I'll do the rest. And he lasted about 2 years. But when he did die, his wife, the client's daughter, was going to struggle financially. And so some of the money that they were able to, this 30,000 a year on average they were going to be spending, that went to the daughter to help them. But the sting in the tail with that story is that client's now got vascular dementia, so no more holidays. So, you know, as Paul Armstrong says,
it will go, you know, to happen.
life's not a rehearsal and the clock's ticking. At least we got them to have those holidays and but again, a lovely couple and again, ape related.
And in terms of, you know, how advisors can practically ensure that they are, you know, having a lifestyle approach to financial planning, could you talk us through the tools that you use on a day-to-day basis, including ScoreMy, which LAM Financial has developed as well?
Okay. But the main software is cash flow modelling. You've got to be really proficient at that, because without cash flow modelling, you can't do any of this.
Really?
And the tools we've used for a long time with the standard, you know, fact finding, all that kind of boring stuff, but bucket lists were really important. And it started off as a joke, but as I did a bit of research on bucket lists to write blogs and things, that's become an essential part of the estate planning process, because ultimately what financial planning is about is making sure the client isn't 100 years old and they've got one foot in the box and they're looking back over their life and they've got loads of money that they never used. That's just a waste. So you've got to get really close to the client to have in-depth conversations. But some of the conversations I had were taking me out of my comfort zone, where I haven't had the training from being a financial planner into almost being a therapist or a counsellor. And I think as my garage says, with a little bit of knowledge, you can do a lot of harm.
Yeah.
And so I was looking at how can we analyse a client's lifestyle. So we came up with this lifestyle wheel, which covers physical health, emotional health, relationships, time, personal fulfillment, career, fun and recreation, money and money management, and then abundance. And then we can get the clients to score where they feel as though they are, and then they get we call it lifestyle wheel. It's a web chart, and if they've got a really round wheel, they've got a nice balanced lifestyle, and we've got to keep that. But if there are any areas where the score is short, we can have a conversation with the client. What do we need to do to improve the scores? And so we can have some really good conversations, but we're always in control, because the lifestyle wheel brings it back into financial planning. And yes, you have some really in-depth conversations with clients and can be quite emotional, like with the clients I mentioned. But ultimately, what we need from a financial planner's point of view is, what are you going to do with your life to make it better or to maintain it? What are the financial implications and what are the timescales? And then we build that into the cash flow projections. And during the time I was building this lifestyle wheel, I'm also thinking, how do we measure our value? Because we used to wait for a new model advisor to come out every week to look at when they were analysing different financial planning firms. And I don't know if you remember that, but they used to put in what they had under management, how many staff they had, what the turnover was. And that was interesting, because we could work out their efficiency ratios, what their turnover was to compare the number of staff. But they also used to go through their charges. And I quite often used to read advisors saying, well, we might be more expensive, but we provide better value for money. And I'm thinking, well, it's not up to us as the advisor to determine whether we provide value for money or not. We've got to give a good service and hope the client sees the value for money. So I was like, how can we measure the value of our service so we can quantify it? The problem with lifestyle financial planning is people don't understand it until you experience it. So how do you get people to experience it if they don't understand it, there's that chicken in the egg. And so I came up with, like, if we just ask them 10 questions on financial planning, not products, but proper financial planning, get them to get a score, and then they realize what it is. And that's, we eventually, over 4 or 5 years, developed the score my question sets. So the way it works, tends to work, if you we send the clients these questions electronically, it takes them 2 minutes to fill in. A lot of new clients commonly get 30-40%, and then we say to them, our job is to get you 90-100%. And so we're taking them through the financial planning process, we ask them to do the questions again at the end of that process, and they should be scoring higher. If they don't, we get sacked. But if they score 30% initially and 70% later on, that's the value of our fee.
Can you give us an idea of how many firms are currently using ScoreWire? Is it just Lamp Finance?
I think there's about 150 now, and I think we've got another... because we're still... We originally had 60 beta testers. We brought a few more on, and we've got a few more on the waiting list.
And can I ask about how is that charged to the advice firm for a flat fee, or is that, or
it's just,
is that
a monthly fee? And
just a monthly fee.
If they don't like it, then get out after 30 days. But it's gone down really well so far, and we've got people in Australia, Malaya, Canada. I've spoken to 2 or 3 people in California who are using it. We had our first one sign up in Germany, and it's like, it's just a bit weird because this just started out on an Excel spreadsheet.
I just wanted to go back to what you were saying earlier, David, about your fees. And I just wanted to clarify. So you charge a small percentage AUM fee, right? And then you sort of charge based on how many hours you're spending with the clients. I just wanted to know, like, when you started doing this model, because it is a bit alternative.
About 14 years ago, and we went through a massive amount of pain, and so other advisors were saying to me, working like that is financial suicide. And I remember thinking at the time, yeah, you might be right, but and if we don't get that invoice paid next week, we've got serious problems, because people don't like writing a check for financial advice. But when they see the value of the lifestyle financial planning, especially now we can give them ScoreMy so that they can quantify the value, it's a lot easier now. And I know other advisors say we don't charge enough, but and maybe we don't, because we don't get any complaints about charges now.
Just on that as well, because then if that means that also you lapse charging based on the hours you spend, I mean, from what it sounds like with everything with ScoreMy and everything around that, you're really trying to dig into the individual client's preferences and needs, as you said, from a lifestyle perspective. How do the clients feel about, you know, paying for more time with you? Do they often ask for more time in a year, or is it sort of one off in the year?
Well, whilst all our fees are time costed calculated, it's a series of fixed fees. So it's not like my wife, who's a lawyer, who they're scared to get the invoice at the end of the month. They do have quite a bit of certainty. I think because they're seeing the value in it, that they're quite happy to pay. But I do think it's important that you split the fees from the financial planning from the financial advice. I don't think you should be paying for the financial advice out of the product. I think they should be completely separate, because I think the client's got to understand that you're there to help them get the lifestyle that they want. And they're quite happy to pay you for that. But if they thought you were just trying to sell them things to get the fee from the product to cover the financial advice, I think that would put them off. They much prefer it being separate. And I just think you should split financial planning from financial advice, and the two should be charged completely separately.
That's really interesting, and that clarity over fees is even more relevant with the advent of Consumer Duty as well. I wanted to ask you whether you think lifestyle financial planning is harder to do for larger national firms. You know, when they've got so many clients to service, and you know, it might not be possible to have that relationship with every single client. I wanted to ask what your thoughts were there.
It's difficult, and I think, you know, when you mention big companies, I think St. James's Place, they are probably in a good place to provide that close service, because their advisors do get close to their clients as well. But for a big organization where clients are allocated an advisor and they're moving on every 3 or 4 years, I think it's going to be very difficult to get to that close personal relationship.
Thank you so much for your time, David. That was fantastic. Pleasure. Thank you so much for coming on today.
Lovely. Thank you.
You've been listening to The Advice Show with myself, data reporter Alicia Hagopian, and David Lamb, Managing Director of Lamb Financial. For any questions, please feel free to tweet us at New Model Advisor or email us at nmateam@citywire.co.uk. Thank you so much for listening, and we'll see you next week.
The Scottish Mortgage Podcast Invest in Progress is back. Join the managers and their guests as they go behind the scenes of some of the most innovative companies of our time. Companies like Climeworks, who are pioneering technology to remove carbon dioxide from the air. Or Zobi, who are at the forefront of a new era of aviation, developing electric air taxis. Or Aurora, who are building software so that trucks can drive themselves. Hear from the leaders of these exceptional businesses on their vision and what the world could look like if they succeed. Available now on all major platforms. Your capital is at risk.